Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. Now, there's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish a book, I stick the podcast up here on the podcast feed and you download it whenever it comes through. So, of course, I always say, oh, it's been a while since the last podcast. That is when it has been a while since the last podcast, and it has been a while since the last podcast. And it's for the usual reasons. You know, the one reason is that I'm very busy and the other reason is that I not enjoying the book at all that I've been reading here. I'll get onto that in a bit. First of all, the busyness, general news, you know, being back in Berlin, doing stuff with friends, generally hanging out, going to the Berlin Juggling Convention, all that kind of stuff. So if you want to, you know, all that kind of stuff in more detail, just follow me on Twitter, which is @LukeBurridge, or just see my blog where I put lots of general updates on there. And the second reason why I'm have been a bit too busy is because I've been working on my own novel, and I've completed it. So my novel that I've been working on since last November, I've been talking about it quite a bit here on the podcast. You can now check that out. Go to lukeburridge.com and click on, I think, original fiction and see about it. And you can download it as an ebook, or I think so far you can just download it as a HTML file or a text file or a rich text file or something like that. It's the new name of it. It's called Minding Tomorrow, and you can find all the information there. I'm really proud about that, and I've got some good responses back, lots of congratulations back, because I mentioned it on Twitter and on my website a few days ago. I guess I put it up there on Monday night. No, I guess Tuesday night, I guess. So that's pretty cool. And just, again, a big thank you to all of the you listeners who have helped me and encouraged me through this period of me putting out my very first novel, completing and putting out my very first novel. I'm sorry if you can hear a bit of noise in the background, because I am actually down now in the south of France, on the coast down near Bordeaux. I'm on my summer holidays. Polo and I are on the road, so I'm recording this here in the back of my van, but it's too hot to record with the doors closed, so I've got it open. Don't have air conditioning here in the van. A little bit of news about the podcast, which I'll just get this out of the way first. The Parsec Awards. I'm not quite sure what they are. I don't really know who wins them or what you do about that, but it seems like I've been submitted to the Parsec Awards. But there doesn't seem to be very many categories, or there are lots of categories, but not for review shows. So I've been put into the Best Infotainment podcast, which I won't win because there's too many other better general infotainment podcasts out there, and also the Best Writing Related podcast. Again, I won't win that because I'm not a writing related, I'm more reading related. I guess maybe writing related in slight ways, but there doesn't seem to be a review podcast category for podcast and science fiction areas, which is a bit of a pity. I'm not sure if you have to vote for the Parsec Awards or if there's a jury or something like that, but I guess I'll find out later, I guess. I'm not sure. Someone email about it if they can tell me more about the Parsec Awards, because I'm not quite sure what goes on there. But anyway, I've been nominated. No, maybe not nominated. Submitted, anyway. And another bit of podcast news. I've been a guest on two podcasts. Well, I have been a guest on the Friday Night Party Line podcast, which was good fun. We recorded that last Friday. It's not out yet, though, so that'll be put out soon. And also, I was a guest on the Sofanauts podcast. I was a guest. I'm going to be a guest. We're going to start recording that maybe in an hour's time. But I thought, while I've got the microphone out, getting ready for that, I'll check this out and do my own a podcast of my own here. So I'm going to be recording that in about an hour's time, and that'll come out tomorrow, which should be a lot of fun. The Sofanauts. So check out starshipsofa.com and to find out about that and download that. And it's a really fun podcast. So you should lots of interesting stuff. Lots of geeky talk about science fiction writing and reading and novels and magazines and all that kind of stuff. So if you're into any of that, check out the Sofanauts podcast. And finally, a little bit of feedback from the last episode. Someone said, is Little Brother really that good? Is it really 4 stars? Well, no, actually, I think I explained quite a lot in the podcast that I did. The book itself, like as a novel, not actually all that awesome. But I did have a good fun reading it, because I thought the experience of reading that book was actually really good fun and quite a unique book. In many ways. So that's why I gave it 4 stars, just because the reading experience... Was it 4 stars? 3.5 stars? I can't remember. But the reading experience was a lot of fun, even though as a novel it really doesn't stand up. There's a lot of things wrong with it. So let's move on to today's review, this episode's review. The book is Hyperion, Fall of... No, not Hyperion. It's Hyperion Cantor's second book there, The Fall of Hyperion. And I read the previous book in this series, Hyperion itself, by Dan Simmons a month ago, maybe 2 months ago, something like that. And yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. So I thought, of course, I want to read now the second in this series. Even though I was warned it wasn't quite so good, I thought, well, you know, how bad can it be? Turns out quite bad. So let me get straight into this. The universe of the book, I'm not going to go into it here, because if you want to know about the universe of the book, it's the same as the Hyperion. So if you've not listened to my Hyperion review, go listen to that now, and I set it all up there. But if you don't want to listen to it, don't worry, because you know you're not going to miss a lot, because I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail about this book. So the story of Hyperion is that you get these, there's this planet called Hyperion, and you get seven pilgrims who were selected by the Church of the Shrike to go and meet the Shrike, or the cult of the Shrike, to go and meet the Shrike. And the Shrike is this weird being who travels through time in different directions and does what he wants there. And so that's a bit, there's lots of weird stuff going on there. And it sort of was a frame story very much in the style of the Canterbury Tales. So each of the pilgrims tells their story of why they're coming on this pilgrimage and what they want to get out of it and why they want to meet the Shrike. And they've all got these different ideas and different things. So so it's really good. Some of the stories I really, really enjoyed. Some of them I just enjoyed. And then the final story, while it was quite enjoyable, it's led up to this very disappointing part where the consul, who was the main character in the first book, just explains everything. Well, not everything, but explains a huge amount. It's sort of like, oh, and this person's working for this, and that person betrayed that, and that person's doing this, and this person's doing that. And he just explains like all the politics and the intrigues and like the twists and stuff that you're wondering about. He just explains it to you. And I was like really unimpressed by that. So everything so far in the book up until that last sort of like 20 pages had been shown, you know, we'd been shown the details of the characters, and we'd found out about the world through the eyes of these like people who were just sort of passing through and not quite sure what was going on. Then at the book, we're just told by this quite high level kind of diplomat, the consul himself, and he just goes, oh, this is this, this is this, this is this, this is this, this is this. And I was like, oh, well, thanks for that. That wasn't very satisfying. And then Hyperion itself ended on this massive cliffhanger when the six pilgrims, they link arms and they walk down to meet their fate, walk down to meet the Shrike. And then the book ends. And I'm thinking, whoa, that was good. A bit of a cut off, an abrupt ending, cliffhanger ending there. But I thought, well, it was good. And I really enjoyed it. I gave it 4 stars because it's easily one of the best reads that I've, one of the best books that I've read so far this year, I guess. So moving on now to the story in Fall of Hyperion. What happens is that the pilgrims go down and hang out and wait for the Shrike to turn up. And that's about it. Nothing much happens. Some of them meet the Shrike, some of them don't. But what happens is that the cliffhanger is like, yes, we're going to meet the Shrike, we're going to meet the Shrike, we're going to meet the Shrike. And then the book starts and they're hanging out and, you know, twiddling their fingers and not doing very much. So there's nothing going on there for about the first half of the book with those guys. But meanwhile, we're introduced to these two other characters. There's some guy who's channeling Keats, the poet Keats, who was, Keats wrote this poem Hyperion, and he wrote another part of a poem. I think it was only a part of a poem, or he was wanting to write another poem and it was unfinished, called Fall of Hyperion. So I mean, this is in real life. And then of course this character plays a part somehow, like they've resurrected him through saved memories or reconstructed memories and things like that. So there's another guy who in the first novel in Hyperion who was like this, but now in the second novel there's another guy who pops up like that, and he's linked to the character of Braun, the female private detective pilgrim who was down there on the planet Hyperion. So they're linked with this somehow connecting brain through a wormhole kind of link going on there, which is a bit weird. And so he's connected in a way that when he sleeps, he sees through her eyes what the pilgrims are doing. And then when he's not asleep, he sees the sort of what's going on in the real world, or not in the real world, in the world of like politics, high level politics, because he's hanging out with Gladstone, who is this other main character at this start of this second novel, and she is the president of the human race, of the I'll just say the human civilization there, fighting against the I explained all of that in the first book. It doesn't really come into it very much here. So what we've done is we've departed from this frame story that we have, and we have this alternative chapters that are told from these two points of view, but it's actually the same point of view. We get the Keats guy in his waking life, and then we get the pilgrims from, you know, other times when he's asleep. And then suddenly, you know, about maybe, what, 10 chapters in, after you sort of got into this, into the rhythm of this, suddenly we just jump away and we go to another character. We meet Gladstone, but not from the point of view of this Keats character. She's just hanging out by herself, and I'm thinking, this is a bit weird. And then we start seeing things from the point of view of other pilgrims when Braun isn't there. So there's this Keats guy has got a connection through Braun to the pilgrims, but then she goes on doing one thing, and then the other characters go off and do the other thing. And I'm thinking, well, why is this going on here? And it's a bit, like, really weird, because in Hyperion, the points of view, the characters' points of view was very, very clear, and it was always very, very important. And they always said, okay, I'm going to tell you the story, but let me play you this tape. And then you'll play this tape of the recordings of this other guy doing something, or, like, and then it goes, Kassad told his story. Kassad's one of the characters in the book, and he tells his story, but it's from, like, a, you know, like, a third-person point of view, but that's all right because, you know, it follows his story. Or another character goes, oh, I want to tell you the story, but first let me read from these notes. And he starts reading from the notes. So you know it's from a different character. So all the times when it wasn't the console, the, like, the main point of view character, when he wasn't telling his story, it was somebody else telling a story, but it was very clearly set up how the console would be hearing this story, even if it was sort of like a little twist or there was some little different play on it that was really good. But now there's sort of that's thrown out. It's all just chucked out the window, and suddenly the story just goes anyway. It's like, oh, well, let's go follow this character for a bit. Oh, let's follow this character for a bit. Oh, let's follow this character for a bit. And the real... the cleverness of this, all these different points of view, and the, you know, the way it was written, and the sort of like the style. I said it was like really good fun. It was like writing like literary porn of the first, in the first book, because there was so much going on and so much to love. And then it's all just, as I said, it's just like, and now let's do this, and now let's do woohoo, and now let's go over here. And it's just like, well, that's not clever. It's not even interesting. So what happens next after that? You know, we get to learn about like different stuff. Well, nothing, because, you know, after the first, you know, 250 pages, nothing was happening. And I was just going, what's happening? We're just told stuff is happening, but we never see it. And then if we do see it, it's sort of like, then it suddenly becomes inconsequential, or something else happens, and you, or it just discards huge parts of the plot, and you think something's important. It's like, actually, and then this happens, and of course that's not going to be important anymore. It's suddenly like, oh, suddenly this is really important. I'm like, well, let's build up to it, or let's do something. So I got about 250 pages into it, and then I just couldn't take it anymore, you know, because it was just so bad, it was just so tedious. I haven't gone into why it was tedious, but I made some notes as I was going through. So, first of all, there's this element that I like in science fiction. I like the science to be, I don't need it to be realistic, it can be anything you want, but you can't suddenly introduce in the second book new laws of the universe, because it suddenly goes, oh, somehow connected through the light years, these two people connected. And I'm like, okay, well, how is that? How are these two people connected through the light years at faster than light, you know? And if you can get a connection from a machine which is so small that it can be in someone's brain, but he doesn't even know about it because it's in the brain, like, how does that work? You know, how do you get that set up in that way? And it's just not explained, and it really reminded me of the... was it the book that I explained before, or I read before, The Last Legends of Earth? And that was sort of like, oh, we suddenly need someone to come back from the dead. Ah, we'll make them come back from the dead this way. And then they suddenly come back from the dead. Oh, we suddenly need ghosts to exist because we want to keep this character around. Ghosts exist. And it's just like, wow, really random levels of technology, really random science. You can just bring up anything you want. So it's not science fiction. This book really is pure fantasy. Now, in the first book, it was a bit fantasy-like as well. And it's like Dan Simmons, he thought of something. It's like, oh, I just put it in the book. Don't need to explain it. And I don't mind that if the book is good, but there's so many other points in this book which are bad. Okay, next thing that I didn't like. Huge secrets are just given away right at the very beginning. You know, like the thing I really disliked at the end of the first book, of the first, like, of Hyperion, was that when the main character just suddenly goes, oh, and this, and this, and this, and this, and this. And I'm just like, wow, I didn't have to work for that at all. I want to work. I want to, like, know that there's a secret, think about the secret, try and work it out for myself, and if I have worked out the secret, I want to be feeling good about myself. It's like, yes, I did work out the secret, and that was fun. Or, if I don't work out the secret, and it's clever, and I think, wow, that was really fun, because I've been tricked, and I want that to happen in the book. I either want to work it out myself and feel good about myself, or I want the author to trick me, or to pull one over on me in some way, you know, and actually, you know, take it in a different direction that I didn't expect, and me to be impressed in that way, and then I'm enjoying myself. But here, there's these huge, big secrets. Like, there's this big twist of the of Gladstone, of the president, or the you know, the general, whatever she is there, and suddenly she just says something. I'm like, wow, that's huge. That's like got ramifications of the entire book, and she just explained it. It's just like, oh, and I think this, and I think this, and I'm just like, Okay. Well, yeah. So the most disappointing aspect for me in the whole book, it's like that in this book, but constantly all the way through. So that gets a thing. Anyway, next up that I didn't like, it's like characters that I liked in the first book, suddenly the characters are still there, but they're not doing anything, and they've just changed a lot. Like, the poet was this really cool guy, and you find out his story, and he does all this stuff, and then in the second book he's just moaning, and he was quite clever and quite fun in the first book, even though he was moaning all the time, but now he's just moaning about stuff. And then he dies, and then I'm thinking, well, what did he have to do with the book? And it's really weird. And I'm just going, okay, I understand what he's doing, because he's trying to complete a book about the Battle of the Titans, and that's what the Keats was trying to do before he died, and that's what the Fall of Hyperion was, and I guess that's what this book is. It's a book about battles of titans, these huge things. And I'm like, okay, that's clever, I guess, but, like, in the end, if you're just referencing something without actually tying it into the book and making the book better. I mean, in the first book, there's loads of references all over the place, and I really enjoyed finding them. But in this book, it's like, if Keats is the only reference, and all you're doing is trying to sort of retell his unfinished work in a way that you finish it. Anyway, it's all over the place. So the character of the poet, can't remember his name now, and that's the thing. It's like, it gets to the point where I really enjoyed these characters in the first book, because they were telling you their story and you were wondering why they're going to be there. Then the second book, they're just hanging out, not doing anything. And if they hang out and not do anything for long enough, you don't care about them. Like the consul and the Jew, they just like hang around and hang around and hang around. And Cassad and Manita, they meet up and have a bit more sex, but you're just like, wow, I don't care about it anymore. Next thing I didn't like, oh, I wrote this down. I can't remember in the book, because I was reading, maybe read it a while ago. It's been a while since I started this book, maybe 3 weeks or something. Anyway, dream sequences to show the real fear of the character. If you have to resort to a dream sequence where someone wakes up sweating about the thing that they really fear, it's like you run out of ideas as an author. That's what happened with the book Century Rain. I realized how bad that book was actually becoming when one of the characters has a dream about something that they fear that's going to be coming up in the future. Anyway, it's a real get out of jail free card. It's like, oh, I want to show how bad this thing is going to be. Oh, let's make them dream about it happening, and then, you know, then they'll wake up sweating and we'll know how much they're afraid of it. It's just like, yeah, we'll just write better. Come up with a better idea than that. Next up, nothing is personal. Oh, I mentioned this just before. In the first book, everything was personal. You know, we were right there with the pilgrims. They were like a small group, and they were traveling along, and big things were happening in the world, but it impacted them on a smaller level. Now we have these galaxy-spanning wars, and I just don't care about them. It's just like, I really don't care about the humans going up against the artificial intelligences, and I don't really care about the core humans going up against these fringe humans. It's just like, that's not interesting. The thing that interested me was the story of Cassad and what he was doing, and the story that interested me was the poet and him trying to find his muse again. And the story that really interested me was the Jew and his daughter, who was I don't want to give it away, but the Jew and his daughter. And all of those kind of things were really interesting. And now it's all about space battles and space opera kind of stuff. And it's just, I just don't care. I want it to be more personal, like the first book was. Next thing I didn't like about the book, characters not doing anything. Yeah, I made note of this again. Page 224, one character says to the another, "At long last, we're doing something, or at least trying to." And I'm thinking, 224 pages in, and now the characters are realizing that they haven't done anything for the past 224 pages? Too late. They need to realize they haven't done anything in the first 20 pages and do something. So get on with it. Next thing I didn't like about the book, constant recapping of things that I've already read in the first book. If you're reading The Fall of Hyperion, you've read Hyperion. And if you read Hyperion, you don't need to be going over about all the backstory and all the exposition that just continuously gets recovered over and over again in excruciating detail. I mean, even in the first book, if they'd have gone into some of the detail that they do in the second book in the dry style, oh, he's doing this because he needs to do this and he's doing this, and this person's doing this because in the first book he was doing that and in this and in that. And I'm just like, don't just tell me stuff. Make the character think about it, or make him reflect on something, or make him do something. Don't just have him, like the narrator, just going, ah, this person recently did this. And I was like, I know, I read about it in the first book, and in the first book I really cared, and now I don't. So it's like, just get on with it, really. Next up that I didn't like, long journeys described in great detail which end in a cliffhanger, which then they turn up again at the end of the next cliffhanger and nothing happens there at all. And then landscapes being described in detail and then you just move on from the detail, and the places that action really is happening isn't described in detail, but the places where they're just passing through is really described. And other things being described in great detail, and then they move on and that doesn't have anything to do with it, and then they go somewhere else, and then but the place that they've just been is in real detail, but the place that they are now where stuff is happening, the story isn't described in real detail. I'm just so get on with it. Just stop talking about all the details of this and the colour of this and the texture of this when it doesn't have anything to do with the story. Get on with the story. Next up, war room scenes. There's like points of because the point of view is jumping all over the place, if that's going to be just discarded, I mean, the idea of having a one character's point of view, why don't we see the battles happening from the point of view of character who was there, like we did in the first? You know, Cassad was there, so and we heard about space battles from his point of view, and it's like, great, that's good. Now what we do, we see people who didn't see the space battles talking about the reports that we did get, that they got from the people who did see the space battles, and explain to other people who didn't know the space battles, who then prepare reports to then go on and tell other people about what happened in these space battles that they didn't see but heard about it fourthhand. I'm just like, wow, that's really unsatisfying. When space battles are going on, at least let me see them, at least hint at what's going on here, rather than just like blah blah blah, this person's doing this and this spaceship comes here and then the whole space battles happen and you just hear about them again. So like next thing I didn't like about the book is Keats. Like I said, this seems to be a retelling of some works of Keats that he didn't complete, and now this is the completion of it. It's like, great, does it make the story any better? Does it make it a better novel? Obviously not, because maybe in the Keats book, I'd have to look it up on Wikipedia, but his poem that he didn't complete, maybe there's just lots of people sitting around doing nothing for half of the story. Maybe there is. But does that make a good book if you retell it in exactly the same form? No, it doesn't. The literary references in the first book were really fun because it wasn't just Keats and it wasn't just romantic poetry or whatever's going on there, you know, that he wants to talk about, or epic poetry, not romantic poetry. Because there was lots more, like different ideas, you know, all these different writing styles, all these different, you know, styles of science fiction. You've got the space opera, you've got the military science fiction, you've got the, the hard science fiction, you've got the more personal science fiction, you've got the cyberpunk kind of science fiction, you've got, like, the detective story, all these different kinds of things being thrown in here. Now we've just got this really, really bland, you know, space opera going on, yet with all these references to Keats. And I'm like, does Keats have anything to do with it? I don't know. So it's just all over the place. Maybe I'm just not clever enough to pick up on the references of this. But then again, I don't need to be clever enough, because I think there's lots of references that I didn't pick up on the in the first book. I was reading the story and I was like, oh, this is Shakespeare. And I was like, oh, it's referencing Shakespeare and all that kind of stuff. But in this book, it's maybe I'm just not picking up anything and didn't like it at all. Next up, cliffhangers. Like I said, I mentioned this just before as well. Cliffhangers at the end of chapters. If you're going to have a cliffhanger, don't have them at the end of every other chapter. And when you come back to the action, make sure that the action that you come back to is more important than the thing that you just left at the cliffhanger. That's what a cliffhanger is. You left it, like, it's like they fall off a cliff, they catch themselves. And then when they come back, they have to be in the same amount of peril, or they have to like be hanging on the cliff, and there has to be an extra level of danger when they come back to keep up the tension. Here, there's a cliffhanger. You come back and they just walk away from each other. And there's a cliffhanger. And they come back and they just move on and just go somewhere else. And I'm just like, well, you can't do cliffhangers like that. It's like really cheeky to make me wait through all these like turgid chapters in between and then come back to something which isn't important anymore. Next up, did I mention the bland science fiction elements as well? You know, all these, you know, the science fiction, the science in the that is there is very fantasy-like, but then the stuff that isn't fantasy-like is just a bit bland now. Maybe it was new at the time, back in the 1980s when this was written. Now, anything. So what happens? I can't really think of anything. I don't have any more notes here of things that I didn't like the book. So let me just tell you the story of me reading this book. I read up to around about page 250. And then I thought, oh, man. And I was just moaning all the time. And every time I went to bed, I thought, okay, now I'm really going to put in some time. I'm going to spend an hour reading this book. And I'd read about three or four pages and then just put it down and, you know, read a magazine or pick up a, you know, my iPod and just listen to some music instead. I was really struggling to get any, like, to make myself invest any time in this at all. So it gets to the point where, you know, life is short. You know, I've only got so much time. I thought, well, I'm just not going to finish reading this book. And it reminds me, actually, or it reminded me of this podcast, the Friday Night Party Line podcast, when I was on it back in maybe December or January. And I was chatting to some of the guys on there. I think it was, yeah, it was Rim from the Geek Nights podcast. He was also a guest. And we were chatting, and he was talking about how Hyperion was really, really good. And I was like, cool, I'll read that book, definitely. And he says, but don't read the second book because it's really, really bad. So I actually made a joke. It's like, oh, this is the kind of book where like the second book is so bad that you just read the first book, and then you go across onto Wikipedia and just read the plot summary of the second book and just read it that way. And he actually laughed and said, yeah, that's exactly what you should do. And I was like, okay. So what happened was that now I was so disappointed with this book that I actually thought, well, I'm going to have to do something. I want to know what like the secret to it. I want to know all of the things that happen at the end of the book. And I want to know sort of all of the connections that, you know, I want to have all these questions answered for myself. But I just can't be bothered to read the last 250 or 300 pages of this book because I just wasn't enjoying it at all. So what I actually did, I went onto Wikipedia, typed in Fall of Hyperion, got Keats' poem page first, and then went across onto Den Simmons' book, and I just read the plot outline, and actually, I have it up here now on the thing. So I went across, and there's maybe, let's just have a look here. Yeah, there's sort of like seven or eight paragraphs. Actually, it's a really in-depth plot kind of summary there, and it goes, okay, at this point, the Ousters reveal their master plan when, you know, and all this kind of stuff, and by this point, Father Dewar has been, you know, and it just goes through, and it tells you what all the characters do, it tells you all the connections between them, and as I was reading this, I thought, wow, there's a lot of stuff going on here towards the end of the book, but actually, this is great, because I intentionally spoiled the book for myself to make sure I wouldn't waste any more time not enjoying the book just to read the end of the book, and lots of people said, hey, why don't you just spoil the end of spoil books and, you know, go into details about the end of the books? And I always think that, you know, I think it makes me a better reviewer if I don't spoil the end of the books. And I always find enough to talk about, hopefully I can find enough to talk about without spoiling and still go into the themes and the ideas and how good the book is. And that's good. But this time I thought, actually, I want to spoil the book for myself to make sure I don't waste any time. And you know what? I'm really glad I am. But again, let's just go over the end of the book that I didn't read, but I did read about on Wikipedia. Seems like a lot of stuff happens in the book. All the plot points are tied up. All the mysteries seem to be solved. And in lots of quite clever ways, actually. Of course, I can't see how they can be science fiction ways rather than fantasy ways or just, oh, I need to wrap up this plot point and I need to do it this way. And that's all great. But I'm wondering how Dan Simmons fits all of the action into the last 200, 300 pages of the book, because nothing happens in the first 300 pages of the book, but so much seems to happen in the second half, as told by Wikipedia. And I've got this feeling that actually he does what he did throughout the first half of the book, is that when anything important is happening, instead of describing or going into it in details, he just has two characters talking to it about each other. Oh, this is what happened now. And you'll be going, oh, okay. And I've got a feeling that's what happens. Now, I can't say that for sure, but if that is the case, I'm glad I just read the summary on Wikipedia. So, to finish up this review, so I don't have to finish reading it, which I'm very, very glad with. So, Hyperion, the first book in this series, in this duo, I gave 4 stars, I think, and I said, well, I would give it higher, but I'm going to see how it's all tied up at the end, you know, because it sort of does leave it on a cliffhanger. It's definitely the first part of a two-part novel rather than a standalone book. But really, if you're going to, I really do recommend Hyperion. And then do what I did here. Read Hyperion, the first book. It's a 4-star book, maybe even greater, because I really, really enjoyed it. I'd probably give it more than 4 stars. But then Fall of Hyperion, literally go onto Wikipedia, read about all the characters, what they do, and how all the mysteries are tied up, and just don't bother reading the book at all. I'm going to give it 0.5 stars out of 5. And I think that's equal lowest score of any book that I've reviewed so far. And I've got to give it under 1 point or 1 star because I didn't finish it. And again, I rate this purely by subjective, like how much I enjoy reading the book kind of factor. So technically, this book might be better than other books that I've read. I doubt it, but it might be. You know, I mean, there's a lot in there and there's lots of good ideas in there. But after Hyperion, after the greatness that was Hyperion, Fall of Hyperion, I mean, Fall of Hyperion just sucks. My pun. Made that up on the spot there. Anyway, that said, the plot outline, me reading it on Wikipedia, me reading the plot outline on Wikipedia was actually more enjoyable than the first half of the book itself. So I think the plot outline on Wikipedia gets 2 stars just for distilling the plot down and leaving out all the crap stuff and tying up it all up. So, Wikipedia page on Fall of Hyperion, 2 stars. Actually, better than the book itself. Better than the book itself. So, I hope you've enjoyed that review. I know it's been a bit of a vague review, but I really can't be bothered to go into all of the different points and the story, because there isn't any. I just can't talk about it, except all the crap stuff, because that's all I could focus on, because there just wasn't anything good in this book at all. And it might be surprising just how low of a rating, but, you know, if it takes me 3 weeks to get 200 pages into the book, there must be something wrong with the book. It's not me. It doesn't matter how busy my lifestyle is. It doesn't matter how well much I'm working on my own work and doing my own stuff. It's just got to be more than that. You just got to do more. Anyway, next book that I'm going to read is called Slan. It's a classic science fiction book from the 1960s. Actually, could you just pass my bag, Pola? Pola's just come into the van here. Could you just the bag there? Because I just want it. Thanks. And she's putting on some food, I think. So, milk. Paula's making a milk coffee herself. Yes, so this is A.E. Van Vogt, or however you pronounce his name, Slan. And it's from the 1950s or something. Anyway, it's an old book, and I've read other books by this guy, and I thought I'd give this one a try, you know, to get some real vintage stuff out there. And so I hope you enjoy that review. It'll probably be in a few days, because I'm already, you know, 30 pages into this book, and it's probably only around about 100 pages long. So, 150 pages long. So yeah, I'm already further through this book in one night than I was through Hyperion in 5 or 6 reading sessions. So that's probably a good sign. That's about it. I'd just like to say thanks for listening. Oh, go and go to my website, download my new novel release, Minding Tomorrow. Again, thanks a lot for everyone who helped me get that completed and put out. It was a good 6-month project. And check it out. Also, check me out on the Starship Sofa Sofanauts podcast, which I'll be recording in maybe half an hour now. And otherwise, yeah, just see you around. If you agree or disagree with anything I've said in this review, email me, luke@juggler.net, or post something on my blog about this or anything like that. That's great. Sounded like the what's the podcast, the Film Spotting podcast. They always say that. If you agree or disagree with anything we said here, drop us a line. Anyway, hope you enjoyed this review, and I'll catch you next time.